Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council work session, regular meeting this August 11th, 2025. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Ringstad.
Here.
Ms. Therrien.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Here.
Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Mayor Proust.
Here. If you're able to, please rise for the invocation of the Pledge of Allegiance.
As we gather to conduct the city's business this evening, may we approach our responsibilities with clarity of mind, integrity of purpose, and wisdom in judgment. Let us be guided by humility and patience and remain committed to treating one another with respect, fairness, and civility throughout our deliberations. Amen.
Amen. Ms. Therrien, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Madam Clerk.
Do you have ceremonial matters this evening?
No, we do not.
All right. We are at citizens' comments, oral communications to the City Council on items pertaining to city business that are not up for public hearing. The total comment period is up to 1 hour, and testimony is limited to 3 minutes. Any person wishing to speak needs to sign up on the list located in the hallway or must have signed up in advance using the procedures for providing online testimony found at the city's website. Respectful standards of decorum and courtesy should be observed by all speakers. Remarks should be directed to the City Council as a body rather than to any particular council member or member of the staff. In consideration of others, please silence all cell phones and electronic devices.
Okay, first up we have Mr. Robert Shields. You have 3 minutes and please state your name for the record.
Yeah, good evening. My name is Robert Shields. I'm here to speak to you tonight. The last time I was here talking about the Polaris, we had turned in a letter of basically a request for support for our upcoming tour of future cities, which is kind of related to the Polaris building. When we originally turned in the resolutions and a letter of interest, the notion was that we would be able to use that to facilitate a work session, just an open forum where we could discuss the ideas that we had and the opportunities that we were presented that are being developed in other parts of the world. The resolutions were passed, but the conversations never happened. So I realized that maybe part of this is that regenerative economics and what we're proposing is kind of complex, a lot of moving parts, that what we need is a more thought out and thoughtful process. So we would like to revise and have actually circulated an ordinance to try to get this on the docket for basically hosting a charrette. A charrette is a design process that allows us to look at the opportunities, vet the options, and build community by creating conscious decisions. Now, this isn't about the Polaris. The Polaris is a holding place for what we could be doing downtown and as a regional development. That was the connection. Those resolutions made a very clear connection about where how the future of the Polaris could be impactful to how we'd redesign our cities. Mark and Gary did not come to Fairbanks looking for prospects. I brought them here to show us what's possible because we have been told over and over again that our future is not looking very bright, and I think we deserve better. If we manage to land a project, there may be some funds coming to ARC, but right now, this is all a labor of love. And we are very grateful for our sponsors and our supporters and our members that are helping us to keep going. We'd like to work with the city in helping to explore these opportunities and how they may be able to work together, because there's plenty of work for all of us. But we need that opportunity. So we're suggesting that by sponsoring the Tour of Future Cities in October and helping us to coordinate these charrettes, that we can get a handle on what this opportunity looks like, not just with the Polaris, but with micro cities and with upgrading our grid. Because to be clear, the funding for a Polaris project from our team comes from Gary. The funding for upgrading our utilities comes from Ali. The funding that potentially upgrading our micro cities comes from Mark. Those people need to be in the room to answer specific questions like Jerry asked last week about the details of financing. That's what I've been trying to orchestrate as their representative or as a representative of this community, looking for viable solutions that we can implement to lower the cost of living and improve the quality of life. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Shields? Seeing none, Ms. Therrien.
Mr. Shields, have you seen the proposed substitute with regard to the Polaris working group?
No.
Okay. Would you want to have time to look at that?
I'm happy to look at anything you guys want to share. Again, we can, this is a public comment period, not a discussion period. I'd love to have a more detailed discussion, but I'd be happy to take a look and have a discussion with each and any one of you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for Mr. Shields? Thank you, sir. Next up is Mr. Victor Boberge. Please state your name for the record, sir, and you'll be given 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Victor Boberge. My phone number and address and everything is on file. I've missed a few meetings. I've been ill, and hopefully I make it through the night.
You better.
Yes. I want to ask is, I've been up and down Barnett Street, and the first time I come up here was 1975, and then I moved up here, and I've been up here permanently, you know, since, and, you know, at Barnett Street has been pretty much is that bicycle lanes. Is that just something to give your employees something to do this summer, or is that state, or is that the borough? Is that city that put all them bicycle trails in? I haven't seen not one bicycle driving in either of them lanes, but I have seen them still driving on the sidewalk. So I don't know is. That was probably a real costly project for whoever, you know, put it together. And, you know, I don't even know who kind of thought it up. If we have it in Barnett, maybe we need it over on Noble, and maybe we need it up on Lacey, and maybe we need it on, you know, 8th Street or 10th Street or something like that. It just seems kind of unusual to me, but... This is Fairbanks, so you guys keep up the good work. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for Mr. Boberge? Mr. Boberge, I so appreciated everything you just said. And with that, during my mayor's comments, I'm going to bring up the city engineer to discuss the time frame and some of the questions you brought up on that process out there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else online, Madam Clerk?
No one has signed up, sir.
Okay, is there anyone in the dais who wants to give public testimony? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. Madam Clerk.
We are at the approval of agenda and consent agenda. Consent agenda items are indicated by asterisks. Consent agenda items are considered together unless a council member requests that the item be returned to the general agenda. Ordinances on the approved consent agenda are automatically advanced to the next regular meeting for second reading and public hearing. All other items on the approved consent agenda are passed as final.
Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the agenda? Is there a second? Does any council member wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? I'm going to pull item A of new business. Anything else? Okay, is there any objection to approving the agenda as amended? Seeing none, agenda is adopted. Madam Clerk.
The consent agenda approved the regular meeting minutes of July 28th, 2025. It advanced to the next regular meeting, ordinance number 6322, an ordinance funding the collective bargaining agreement between the City of Fairbanks and the Firefighter Union and amending the 2025 city operating budget. Introduced by Mayor Pruse. It accepted the Permanent Fund Review Board meeting minutes of April 30th and the Clay Street Cemetery Commission meeting minutes of July 2nd. We are moving back to the General agenda, near the top of page 2, special orders. The Fairbanks City Council will hear interested citizens concerned with the following alcohol license applications for renewal. Public testimony will be taken and limited to 3 minutes. I'll read the license number and DBAs into the record. License number 426, The Bakery Restaurant. License 4314, Gallo's Mexican Restaurant. License number 556, International Hotel and Bar.
Is there a motion to waive protest on the alcohol license renewal applications? Ms. Tidwell, second by Ms. Sprinkle. Is there any citizen here wishing to speak to these alcohol renewal license applications? If so, please come forward, state your name and for the record, and you'll be given 3 minutes. Seeing none, public testimony is closed. Okay. Council discussion, and in regards to discussion on this, we have 3 different liquor licenses. After a review of the records given to me by the city clerk, I find no issues with them. I did speak directly with the manager, I would say, and one of the owners of the International Hotel and Bar, and they have been slow. They're working harder. They have new management for the third time in about a year and a half. And so the call volume there actually went down over the last year. And I see no reason to put in a protest on any of these 3 liquor licenses. Ms. Sprinkle?
Slow at what? They've been slow at?
Revenue.
Oh, sorry. Okay, fair enough. My question really was about the bakery restaurant. Someone told me they were closing. Is that just bad rumor?
Legal counsel will address that.
Yes, that is, to the best of my knowledge, rumor. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, so it's not true.
Are there any other questions? Okay. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll on the motion to waive protest on the alcohol license, liquor license applications?
Mr. Marnie?
Yes.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Yes.
Ms. Therrien?
Yes.
Mr. Cleworth?
Yes.
Ms. Tidwell?
Yes.
Mr. Ringstead?
The motion to waive protest passes by a vote of 6-0. Madam Clerk?
We're at Mayor's comments and report.
Okay. When I was in Washington, D.C., I talked with Senator Murkowski in regards to a second application for our ambulance bus, and we were given notification that we have a funded ambulance bus in the amount of $815,000, so I'd like to thank Senator Murkowski for getting that included in the budget. It's not funded yet. Last time she got it included in the budget, but because it went to a continual resolution, it was not adopted into a budget. So hopefully this time we get a budget, and this ambulance bus for the chief will have available for 14 stretchers and 22 people sitting. And we've looked at this and said, okay, what type of incident can happen that we need an ambulance bus? And 2 years ago, we had the incident with the rollover of a vehicle of the military out near Salcha. My greatest fear, and I knock on wood, is that a tourist bus gets in an accident. And that's where you have your mass casualties. So we're trying to get that taken care of, and the ambulance bus, if we get it, will be housed in a heated area at the Public Works. Jared, come on up and give us a report on our abatements and or blighted properties.
Well, good evening, Council. As you know. So giving a rundown of kind of where we've been, where we've come from, lessons learned, and what's coming up. So just highlighting things as we started out, significant learning curve for myself and multiple members of city staff, new department heads. So there's a good learning curve involved with that. And the uniqueness of every individual property, everything from what's the issues with the properties, how would we fix them, ownership, back and forth. A lot going into that, a lot of lot of research, discussion, right, actually involving property owners and the different parties. And then learning just kind of what the limitations within the city are in, you know, typically related towards, you know, areas that, you know, frankly, we know have, you know, staffing shortages here or there. And, you know, even a place that is technically staffed like Public Works, they only have so many days available to do cleanups. So there's a lot of integration that in my mind still needs to kind of be pursued. But I feel we've come a very long way in this very short time. So year to date, we've done four completed abatements, what I would consider completed, two voluntary grounds cleanups that have been wrapped up and done. We've completed two blight cleanups, property grounds and vehicles pulled out, removed, and in both, at least so far, since they've been wrapped up for the last month or so, both looking solid, not immediately reaccumulating junk and those types of things. So hopefully related things like police and EMS activity drop as well. The next cleanup is our first, what I would consider truly major cleanup. And by that, I mean likely required to vacate and secure the building. So it involves people losing housing, right? And then also, in terms of scope, the cleanups that we've done so far have been a couple of containers, 1 to 3 containers of, you know, the big roll-off containers that are part of the waste, you know, the waste companies use. This one, we're expecting 8 to 12 to go into that cleanup. So that is going to be a major operation as it goes down. That's going to be our first week of September, barring any delays. And that's going to be a significant investment of resources. You know, I'd like to thank Jeremiah, as always, for his assistance. He's coordinating with the Fairbanks Rescue Mission to have their staff and their equipment be used for that major cleanup, so Public Works can actually still do the rest of the city's jobs that need doing. That is a property that's, frankly, was the first property that I ever put my eye on. So while it's unfortunate that it's gotten to the state that it's in, the people there, the residents, the owners have, you know, it's at this point not complied with, you know, enough of the abatements and blight notice and orders to, you know, necessitate this final notice that DC Sweet and I delivered him last week. So, you know, not excited for it on that side of things, but, you know, looking forward to the benefit that it'll give the city in cleaning up a whole neighborhood. After that, we're hoping to complete the Willow Street abatement. We'd like to get that one done, of course, this year. You know, we want to get that place taken care of. And on that one, we can say that the bid advertisement that was in the paper yesterday, Sunday's paper, so that is now out there for hazardous demolition bids to be gathered. Jeremiah has his plan for the grounds themselves for ripping all that out from the fence all the way back to the slough, and leaving only the building for the hazardous waste company to have to deal with due to the conditions at the building itself. And the only update in terms of the question of blighting and abatement versus purchasing of the property is that the power of attorney, as of 15 minutes ago, when I last checked my email, has not sent me the copy of the power of attorney that they agreed to send today. So, you know, I'll call them tomorrow.
What we can also do is when we decide on the, whether we acquiring the property or we just abating it, blighting it, once we have their power of attorney and we know that we're going to be acquiring the property and ownership, then we can present to you a resolution of acceptance and also at the same time a real estate narrative. How many square feet is the property? once it's cleared what we think the estimate of value is. That way, and then that's going to bring a whole different issue up in the future. If we own this property, we're able to dispose of it. What is our process of disposal? That's a whole different issue down the road. Of course, we want fair market value, but we want someone to build on it within 2 years to get it on the tax records, things like that. So that's a discussion we will be having, because this is one of those where it's not for the public good. We're taking it. For basically, it's more economical for the owner to give it to us versus having us do all the work and then putting liens on it. So that's what we're doing. And we're working with the people who represent the owner. So just want everyone to know that. Jared, anything else?
Then just finally, a couple things. There are three remaining blight properties that have active approved cleanup plans dated from the end of August and mid-September and then the end of October, respectively. So that it finishes up the properties that are actively declared blighted. And then just kind of looking ahead as we get into winter time and thinking about how things are going this season and how we want things to go going forward, is I've kind of piggybacking in with something that Chief Kakaro has been pushing for in having a hopefully monthly meeting between code enforcement, fire department, buildings department, police department, when we can, to basically have a code task force, pick the name later, I don't care, to where we can be on the same page for what needs to be a priority. Because at this point, commercial abatements and blights, they exist. None of them have been declared yet, but I could point at a couple buildings right now. And making sure that the city departments are all on the same page and we know what each other is working on and what the issue is, because that's part of the blight process is, if I don't know what a fire hazard is versus an dangerous building, then that could just take properties completely off the radar, right? So that's something that I'm looking forward to, you know, getting, getting going and attending and rocking out. That will only additionally help break down, you know, departmental siloing and the insular nature that comes from, you know, police being, you know, the police and fire being the fire, and I have to take care of these things, right? That's the family, right? So that's it. Questions?
Ms. Therry, and then Ms. Prinkle, and then Ms. Tidwell.
Thank you, Jared. So you said that that you might have to have people removed. Have you gone and got an FED or any court papers to remove them yet?
No, ma'am.
So you're hoping that they just voluntarily leave?
Well, that would be preferable. Actually, the preferable thing would be for them to get their water reconnected and fixed, so no one has to leave.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Sorry. So, with that particular property, my understanding is that the building official is or is planning on declaring it a dangerous building, not fit for human occupancy. Once that's posted, it's actually a misdemeanor for anyone to inhabit the building. So by effect, the individuals will be out of that building. Hopefully it will be on a more voluntary basis and not forced, as you mentioned. So we're not doing the civil FED thing. It's a different kind of angle on it.
It's a condemned building. Ms. Sprinkle.
Jared, thanks for what you're doing. Appreciate it. And I want to know generally, In a case, are you seeing most of the trouble with people living in a house owned by somebody else? Or is this usually the owners that are caught? Is there a general rule of thumb?
Excuse me. Generally, it kind of depends on the condition, I would say. So say an unoccupied vacant home is, or something where the owner is out of state and they're renting, right, to people, and it's rundown conditions and that's creating an issue. If it's something that's more, say, hoarding, right, we're collecting things from the transfer site, et cetera, that's in what I've seen more typically owner-occupied.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When first we talked about your position, and I think we dreamt up some concept of having like a dashboard that spread across all the departments so that you, everybody could see the state of that one property. There would be no question. So the siloing did disappear. Is that something you're building or working on? Because I think you talked about it as well.
Right, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And what I would say is I've gotten to the point now with knowing what to ask and also who to ask that I don't feel like this, it's not a wall that I bounce off of, right? I can get the answers I need, right? What would be great is if we were able to come to the table and everyone can have that open conversation. Because right now things are kind of flowing into me and then I'm generating the conversations. And I would prefer it if it was a little bit more open in that way.
And if I could to Mike, because we talked about that software that Jeff Jacobson was trying to
spin up. They have since completely gotten rid of that software. It wasn't living up to expectations.
All right. But if Jared knew what it was like, maybe there's something he could look, an alternative?
Yeah, we have an alternative that that Public Works is rolling out right now that seems to be working pretty well. The one before GoGov, it just wasn't working for anybody.
Okay. I just wanted you to have all the power you could have to make sure you knew what was
going on. The new service that Jeremiah has brought in called RIKE, WRIKE. The rollout for that is brand new, but we've been starting to work on conceptualizing what a code compliance portion of that could be for collating documentation. And supposedly, even if people don't use that system, because every department has their own software suite and everything, if I say, hey, I need to send an email to so-and-so and it's tied to that, you know, I send it from that system and they reply back, it automatically goes into that ticket or case, you know, project.
Okay.
So conceptually, that might work out for
okay.
us.
Okay. All right. I look forward to knowing more. Thanks.
Ms. Tidwell.
Great job. You had said that there's three places left that have cleanup plans, and I just wondered where those places are, like as far as what you see needing to be done and what's been budgeted to accomplish those tasks, and knowing if any of the other ones saved money or went over, like how are you looking money-wise?
Sure. So, Margarita, do you have a current number for me? Was it 125? Okay, all right. So about 125K. Still sitting in there. And what I would say is these first abatement cleanups overall have been able to be done pretty frugally, pretty cheap on the dime. That's a combination of some property owners being like, yep, I got it, I'll take care of it. Others saying, hey, I'm starting, but I could use some help. Is there any resources you can help with? The test driving of the voluntary cleanup program. You know, we've tried that with one blight property where the owner was very, helpful, like just starting to do stuff right away. So using those things, we've been able to keep costs down. Now, the flip of that is that the abatements we've done thus far have all been relatively small. So the upcoming ones are going to cost, right? Are they going to cost? So to speak to your question, the remaining property cleanup plans, one of them goes through the end of October. If that owner doesn't complete that portion of the work, realistically, we're not going to get to that actual abatement until springtime, you know, unless we have a very unusual fall and then start of winter, right? Now, the The other ones are, I think, on the smaller scale. And the other option is there's two other properties that I didn't mention that are blighted, and the owners have not been in contact the way they need to be. So this last week, those owners got sent a letter saying, if you don't respond by the end of August, your $300 monthly charges will commence. You know, so knowing that we have a limited time and limited amount of resources, that's the other part of it that the first time we're actually going with that thing of you need to reach out to us. Otherwise, you're just going to start collecting a bill. Whereas all other property owners have at least been in contact, even if it hasn't been the best, you know, pleasant and most uplifting, it's at least they're in contact so the process can carry on.
Mr. Ringstead, then Ms. Sprinkle.
You started out kind of where we've been. It made me start thinking now, see if I've got this right. We started this about a year and a half ago, pushing forward with let's get a plan and start doing something. I think we cleaned up three last summer, three significant ones.
Three very big significant ones.
Yes. And you've said you've done two or three this year?
I would say we've done
four. So far done, mm-hmm. And you've got three more in the works. Four more in the works.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Seven.
Now, we may not get all of those this year. I don't expect to necessarily.
We got three last year, and we've got four so more. That's seven, and we might get 10 done in our first year and a half. I think you're making great progress. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle.
And I know you have a lot on your plate. My question is, how are we working through you to alert vacant properties that we need their information? What are you sending letters? How does someone tell you, hey, there's a vacant property? Does someone reach out to you? Let's start that conversation.
At this point, we haven't had any owners of vacant properties just reach out to the city. What I've created with the help of Megan over at Fire Department is an online form and database that will be loaded onto the city website. So the form will be there so they can click here, fill it out for their vacant property, all the information, a little bit extra by request on there versus what was in the resolution. And then that can build a nice secure digital database for us. I have not sent any letters. I have a list of properties ready to go, but I haven't sent any letters to that effect because I don't have a way for them to upload it.
Sue, what happens a lot is I get a phone call, such as the property on Hanson Road, and I say to the person who's writing a complaint, send me an email. That way it's in writing. Once we get it in writing, we send out Jeremiah, Bob, to look at the property. Is there vehicles in the right-of-way? Does it violate two out of the nine items that the ordinance calls for? If it does, then we can go for abatement. So we get phone calls, we get emails. That's how we put together this list, okay, as per the direction of the ordinance.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I want to make sure that what we talked about was, if someone's away for the winter, we need to know that property can be protected from bad behavior while someone's in Florida. And it would only be available to Jason.
That's a different subject matter.
Okay, I just wasn't sure if that's how that was, or Jared, for whatever he was going to do with this. That was it. Thank you.
Any other questions for Jared?
Oh, just for your reference there, while the resolution had the FPD letter of trespass, right, as an option, that has been incorporated into the form digitally. So for the first time that they'll be able to go, vacant thing, do you want to do a trespass letter? Yes, and they can do it digitally right within that form.
Fantastic.
And go straight out to the people that need to. So pretty cool.
Thank you, Jared. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Mr. Pistache, come on up. The first thing we're going to talk about is lighting.
Lighting.
Mr. Boober was not here last time to get the lighting report.
Well, I think the problem was on the old Stees between College Road and the Johansson, if I remember. So there was four circuits out there that we looked at, three on the old Stees and one on Trainer Gate. We found some lights out. And the most interesting thing was that at the intersection of Helmrichs and the old Stees, our street lights, nine of them are tied into the DOT load center. So we didn't have access to that, but we've worked that out since the last report. Other lights that were out there, there are some remnant lights in the city that are still controlled by photocells. We have like three master photocells, and they control most of the lights, but there are some remnant ones that are controlled by photocells of their own, and those were slow turning on, so we're watching those for the winter. And there was some, one had a loose wire, so I think we fixed most of the problems out there. And we'll be watching that intersection. I'm working with Eric Slay to, and the old Stees is going to be reconstructed here, hopefully, soon, one of these years. Uh-huh. And when that's done, those lights will definitely switch to the city circuit. But in the meantime, when those lights are out, we got to work closely with the DOT.
Let's talk about bicycle paths. Now, this idea originated out of Fast Planning, out of a subgroup from Fast Planning?
Well, the city actually nominated a bicycle path project, well, probably 4 years ago. But since then, the overall scope of the project changed, and it got more and more involved. And some of the concepts that are out on the street now did come from the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and Fast Planning and the city. Yeah.
Now, we had a couple work sessions on this where we went down into your office and we saw what they wanted and we rejected that and we took just two streets.
That's correct.
10th Avenue and Barnett, because they basically wanted Bicycle City.
There was pretty extensive one on First Avenue. From the bridges down to Pioneer Park, and there were Gillum and five or six other streets that they wanted to use. But 10th and Barnett demonstrate the features that they were interested in seeing, especially in a pilot project.
This is a pilot project?
Yes.
When does it expire?
Shortly. It's kind of
not
weather
soon
dependent.
Enough, you mean?
It's September. I can't remember the exact date, but, I wanted to get to make sure it could get pulled down, because remember, we've got to repaint. And so we don't want to do it when there's a chance of snow. So it's coming down shortly.
Have you been tracking any people commenting on this?
Yeah, sure. And I've been specifically looking for accidents. Ron helped me the other day, really responsive. The officer was in the hospital talking to the person who was in an accident at 7th and Barnett. It wasn't the bicycle features situation. I was concerned that a sign had come down or something we set up wrong. I want to correct it right away, but she was northbound on the bicycle path, heading in the right direction. She wasn't paying attention, and she ran into a car at 7th Avenue that had a green light, so she ran into the vehicle.
Council, is there any questions for Mr. Pristach on this? Ms. Sprinkle?
Did you guys ever think about doing the little count that you do for cars? Has that ever been considered? Or, hearing about, did someone ever see anything? That doesn't seem like a...
Valerie does a count every day.
Not anymore.
I don't think they're doing an automated one, but I heard that Fast was actually going to count by the old-fashioned way of having somebody count. But I don't know. I haven't done it.
Okay, let's move on to the letter of interest on the Polaris site. We've had two meetings at that on this letter of interest, putting it together. And the meeting has been myself, you, chief of staff, two city council members, and C.B. Bettisworth. The only reason why the city attorney wasn't there is because we're on vacation. And it happens in my office there. Nothing to do with the Polaris working group, correct?
Correct.
We are going to have a letter of interest available for the city council to review at the next meeting. And you're putting that together?
Yes,
after
sir.
The work sessions that we've had?
Yes, I'm halfway through it now.
Okay. Then from there, we're going to have, it is our plan to have an open house for the public to come in September the 9th, 10th, or 11th, date to be determined, and give a presentation on the process of what we're doing. And the letter of interest is a time frame from, say, September 1 to the end of November. And then the request for proposal will be from the 1st of December to the end of April, a five-month period. That way, we have a long time for the public to weigh in as either someone who wants to give us a letter of interest to look at this, and from there have the city council look at it and see what we're wanting to do, and also have a long time frame for the request for proposal. Because once they pull the trigger on a request for proposal, that's a long, arduous process for any type of developer, and our guesstimated cost is about $100,000 to a $200,000 investment. So we're trying to make this as open as possible, as detailed as possible. The city council, by statute, or excuse me, by code, owns the property and will make the determination, if at all, what goes on there, who gets it, how they get it. We've had interested parties, but we're bringing this through what I call an ardent public process. So it can never be not said that we did not give everyone a chance to see what they want to do, and the city council to correctly review what they want to have there. Council, any questions? Ms. Therrien?
On the letter of interest, when you say next meeting, is that the work session first and then the council meeting, or just one meeting?
It's going to be one meeting, and we can have it as a work session next. I don't know if Bob will have it available next Tuesday or not.
I can make it more of a priority, so you could definitely have a draft by then if you want.
Okay. And do we need a resolution from the city council to produce a letter of interest on something like this? This is new territory for me. Ponder it. It's new. You know, this is new territory for all of us. So go ahead and ponder that. But whatever we need to do, we will do correctly. Simple as that. Any other questions? Ms. Sprinkle?
Well, that brings me to this ordinance or resolution.
We'll get to that. I've pulled that. We'll get to that. Any other questions for Mr. Pristash? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And that is my report, Madam Clerk.
Council member comments.
Ms. Tidwell.
I would just like to report that FEDCO has submitted the ARDR application on July 31st. So we have moved one step further along in the process. It officially has been submitted to the Department of Commerce, and on goes the path. But it's moving forward.
Why, of course you can.
If it happens, if they say yes, there does the conversation come into play that says, or you're now having the order, this is what we want to see. Is that when you're going to
have? Well,
is that the board?
Yeah, I mean, that's an ongoing discussion all the time with the board of directors, like, you know, what they want to be working on. I know that when we did our budgeting last time, That was something that we kind of discussed maybe with our portion of funding, if there's like specifics that we want to put forward. You know, we kind of talked about that last year and just didn't have the time to do it. So that might be something that we want to address now that we're getting close to the budget cycle again. It takes time to put that together. And
okay.
Yeah, I mean, we could have a work session and work on that.
Okay.
Is that what you mean?
Yes, and more. So I'll leave it at that, though. Thanks.
Okay.
Mr. Marty.
Not at this time.
Mr. Engstead.
So I got some food for thought here with my new latest subject of interest. I don't know if anybody reads the police blotter other than me.
I do.
Good. So Tuesday, August 5th, we have two assault cases in here. Thursday, August 7th, we have one. And on Sunday, August 10th, so within 6 days, we have four on Sunday. So we have seven of them in less than a week. Interesting reading some of these. They're not all from the city, but most of them are. You know, you read these things, it's not a bunch of stupid drunk teenagers. These are people in the 30s and 40s and 50s. You look at what we're doing, and Lonnie and I had a discussion with the DA, and I think we're not done with that discussion. But in that, and I think, Valerie, you had kind of brought this up when we were talking about budget, but if we're going to address this, it's just not our city police that got to fix it. We've got to have the DA's office. We've got to have the corrections department, and we're probably going to have changes by the legislature. So there is no simple fix, and just throwing money at it isn't going to do it, but it'll probably take parts of all of them. But one of the things that I realized, and I think I commented once before about where does this lead, there's one in here on Sunday that says this guy that was arrested that was assaulting somebody down here in the plaza. Another man asked this guy to leave the woman alone, and the guy started screaming and yelling at them, says, "Do you want a knife?" The man pulled out his gun in defense, called 911, and the guy that was in trouble here, he decided to leave. So I think I commented earlier that pretty soon people are going to all have their guns, and that's not the answer we want, but that's where, I mean, so people are already doing that. 6 blocks from here, right? 8 blocks from here. We have to have that continuing discussion, and I think in my mind, I'm going to try and pursue that. It'll take work on our part. It'll take work on everybody else's part, from all the way to the governor's office, as far as I'm concerned. So I think we have to say, no, we don't want people having gunfights downtown anymore. You know, and that's, but already we've had one this week. Somebody had to pull a gun to get a guy to leave this poor woman alone. I don't know where the one is about Portland Lou, but apparently that happened in the last couple of weeks too. So anyway, we're going to continue to work that, and I think I'll try to keep folks posted, but it's going to take months, and it's going to be a lot of people involved.
Mr. Engstead, do you like having that plant there? I like it there too.
One final comment. So Sunday, my son and I were working in our driveway, cleaning up brush. I'm around the corner, and there's some guy standing in the middle of our driveway, smoking a cigarette, him in his backpack and his hoodie. My son asked him to leave very politely, and he just stared at us, and he asked him the second time, and he just stared at us, and he asked him the third time, and the guy says, "I can't hear a word you're saying." So we have, well, my son posted several signs, including "Beware of Dog." We have three.
Beware of owner.
Beware of owner.
Miss Sprinkle.
Um,
I guess I'm just going to make a comment about the bike test lanes. I'm just disappointed that we can't try something in our city. It's new. It's unusual. People don't, they don't love things that are changed, I guess. And it just, it makes me sad to see it disparaged, because why not? Why can't we try it? It's not like we, people ride bikes. I'm just really sad to see this test pilot job project get torn up like it's being done. And it just breaks my heart to see that we can't just say, okay, maybe it didn't work. But we don't know. We don't know numbers. I haven't seen anything. I just feel like I've seen people use it. I've had people tell me how much they love it. But I'm just sad about that. That's where we are with the bikes.
Ms. Therrien.
Thank you. Talking about bikes, when I was going to my house, there was about 6 kids riding bikes. They all looked like 10, 11, and they were using that bike lane going this way, and I was really proud of them. But then they were going up and down on the sidewalks, too. So, but at least the kids are using them, whether or not they know they're in the right place or not. I'd also like to do the land acknowledgement. We respectfully acknowledge the Diné people upon whose traditional lands we reside. We honor the Diné who have been the stewards of interior lands and waters for centuries. The elders who lived here before, the Diné people of today and future generations to come. We also recognize that Alaska Native people would traditionally gather here and harvest Native foods. And if you would be so kind, Mayor, that before we get to resolution 5182, could we maybe have a 10-minute break?
Is there a specific reason?
Well, I haven't had a chance to talk to Crystal about her amended resolution.
You need a 10-minute break to explain it to Valerie versus
all
sitting
right,
in.
Maybe.
We can talk about it on the floor or take a break.
I could do it in 5 minutes.
We'll take a 5-minute break.
Okay.
Mr. Clayworth.
John, you hit the nail on the head and you said the DA's office. Most of the people we encounter, and I'm down there every day, have very long records that we check out, and they, after a attempted theft or robbery, they're back on the street within weeks or a month or whatever. And you just wonder, what does it take? And the one gentleman that we were familiar with a theft, was in the police jail over here, and his first phone call was to a friend to say file for unemployment. The theft didn't go very well. Bike pass, just a matter of process there. Ultimately, the bike paths or paths, if we have them and how they're configured, will be determined by this council. It won't be a PED committee come somewhere on fast planning. It won't be the fast planning staff. It won't be us on the policy board, ultimately. It'll be the city council has to buy off on what is done. I don't take many trips, but I think I said at the last one, I went through 7 states in about 2 weeks driving around and looking at the configurations for bike paths. Very simple, and it's essentially what I've talked about before on Gaffney Street when we did that. No, I'm sorry, on Gillum Way. You move the fog line out to accommodate bicyclists, and you call it a day. You don't need to call it a bike path or anything. They will use it. The same is being done on First Avenue, like I said, by the Curling Club. In those areas where you have a wide right-of-way like we enjoy on Barnett, you have a fog line way out, and the bicyclists use that in summer and winter, and it still leaves us room for snow in that area. It's just by design. It's a part of the complete streets process that you can accommodate all modes of of transportation easily and simplistically. We don't need to go into elaborate processes. And going through all those states, that's exactly how most of them did it. And that's what I will ultimately pitch. But we'll get the feedback on this. We're compiling it at Fast Planning now and see what all the people are thinking, both positive and negative. On the other subject, we're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes, just the Polaris group. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a 5 to 10 minute break. And Valerie and Crystal, I'd like to meet you in my office.
Yes. There is no unfinished business, so new business item A that was pulled is resolution number 5182, a resolution requiring that the Polaris Working Group meetings be publicly noticed and open to public participation, introduced by council members Therrien, Tidwell, and Marnie.
Okay, does anyone want to advance this? Does anyone want to open this up for discussion?
Or the unsubstituted one? Or?
Yes, just the unsubstituted one.
Well, can we not move to substitute?
No. I'd rather you not. Ms. Therrien.
At this time, I would like to withdraw resolution 5182 and give it a little bit more thought so we could bring it up within the next 4 weeks, so that I can work on it a little bit more.
Does anyone have an issue with that? Mr. Clearworth?
I want to discuss this whole concept, and I want to start that tonight. The only way we can do it is putting something on the floor. Otherwise, we can't have a discussion. I'm not in favor of either of these, and I'll give the reasons why.
Can you make that discussion under your comments?
Is that where you would prefer it to be?
Yes, I would.
Okay. Well, people can wait for the comments. We'll do that.
Okay. Any further discussion on this? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, how would you classify this?
There was no motion to approve, so the resolution dies.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate everyone's patience on this. It is very appreciated. Madam Clerk.
All right, we are at committee reports and council member comments.
We'll start with Jerry Clayworth.
That was quick. Thank you, Mayor. This isn't the first time we've been through a process. I touched on that at the last council meeting when we inherited an entire city block and we dealt with it. We made some good moves. We made some that were not so good. And you kind of learn from your mistakes. And hopefully we can avoid doing some of that here with this property. To me, the working group now is the city council, period. And the staff is to be our aid in that process. And we need to set some very basic parameters first. One, do we want to develop this property? I'm assuming everybody does. Two, is government invited to participate, or we want it to go back on the public tax rolls? And that's a big question on that. Who do we want to build this? Public, private, or either one? Do we have guidelines for development? What absolutely do we not want to see, if anything? We need to have that discussion. Do we need to go out to a letter of interest? We did that back then, and it didn't work very well. And I'll tell you the pitfalls of that is we had some people that did not want to respond to an LOI because they would reveal, be asked to reveal too much information before they actually went to the RFP. And so they either didn't reply to the LOI and waited for the RFP process, or they just gave an extreme cursory look at a project with very little to back it up, especially when you got into discussions about financing. They don't want to reveal it, and I would not. If I want to develop that property, I'm going to respond to the RFP, but I'm not going to lay out my hand prior to that in any great detail. I'm not going to do it. And I don't think you should have any developer that is asked to do that. My recommendation, and if you don't go this way, no big deal, but my recommendation would be to go to straight to an RFP and set up the parameters of that. You can have open houses like the mayor is proposing. You can have work sessions where you invite people to come and give their input. All of this is well and good. I heard the word ranking of projects. That was one of our failures, because we had people that kept trying to look at ranking whatever RFPs we got, and they would rank according to some system that, you know, they thought was important. The trouble with ranking is that every council member is going to have a different idea of, if they see these requests for proposals, you're going to go, hey, I really like this one, I don't like this one. But how am I supposed to rank that when I don't like it? You know, give it a 5 or a 10 point or whatever. Is bigger better? Maybe not. Maybe somebody thinks, well, that guy that brought forward the idea of a specialty market on that because the downtown needs a market, it's not as appealing as that 10-story high-rise that somebody else brings to the table. But are you going to fail because your project isn't so big and you don't rank so highly? I would really recommend against a ranking process, and ultimately the council will be picking the proposal through the RFP process and the parameters that have been set out. Anyway, those are my thoughts right now, but the first and most important is that this council needs to be that committee. You don't have to worry then about public meetings, notifications, and all that, because all our meetings are notified. We're in the public. Everybody can hear everything we're going to say. Anyway, those are my thoughts right now. Thank you.
Ms. Therrien.
Yes, I thought I'd give a report on the Permanent Fund Review Board meeting that we had on July 30th. And I know you have the minutes from the last meeting. As of June 30th, the fund performance did really good. It accrued income at 6.2% of an increase. June of 2024 had 7.2% for the year, if I'm right. Yes. And realized gain, we had 1 million more from last year. So that's really good. And unrealized loss or gain was again in 1 million. And so there was a 7.8 million swing in one quarter. So that did really well. And the earnings net of expenses was 2 million more than the same time last year. So we're really doing well. The value on July 29th was 162,963.27 and 180.1 million in net earnings. We spent a lot of time talking about whether or not we wanted to go into the private investment. And we spent time, Margarita explained, about the North Slope Borough Permanent Fund and the Municipality of Anchorage Trust Fund. But basically, they have their setup differently than we do. And so in order for us to either go into private investments or private loans, we would have to become a partner with those investment opportunities. And for example, if we wanted to spend $5 million to a private equity or credit fund, in the first month, we could commit $5 million. In the month three, they could ask for $1.25 million to be sent to them. In month six, there would be no distribution. In month 11, they might ask for another $0.75 million. In year two plus, we might begin receiving distributions, but it would probably be drawn over 3 to 5 years. And then in year 10 plus, the final liquidation and distributions. And the capital calls are usually within 10 to 15 business days. So we spent a lot of time talking on that. We would probably have to have a vote of the public in order to do it. And we would have to educate the governance bodies, clarify internal roles and responsibilities, who would record capital calls and distributions. And one of the major problems with using this is that they won't give us a final accounting for maybe 4 months at the very least at the end of the year. So we couldn't do our review of all of the accounting because we wouldn't have that information. And sometimes it might be 4 to 6 months. So the audits would have a really hard time. We would have a hard time dealing with audits. Let me see. And as far as compliance, there were no issues with compliance. One of the best things that we did was we sold gold. We had 21.3% return. And
did you use Jerry Cleworth?
Thank you for that.
Yes. And in European financials, there was a 12.5% return. And the basis points outperformed the benchmarks. And so because the municipality of Anchorage and the borough, North Slope Borough, have different ways that they handle their trust funds, it would be very difficult. We'd have to do a charter change. And I know that Marguerite was going to ask our attorney to have us get your opinion on that, just so it's really good. And so private credit would be loans, and private equity would be stocks and bonds. So I've got my whole book here if anybody wants to look at all that. It's very interesting how other municipalities deal with this. And the problem is we might not see any money for 10 years. Yeah. And that would be very difficult. So that's my report on that committee.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I have nothing to report, thanks.
Mr. Ringstead, talk to us about your plant.
More than once a week.
Maybe some weed and feed.
Other than that, it's doing fine.
Once a week is enough, John.
Oh, okay. Get the expert over here. She can educate me.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, tomorrow night I have a diversity council meeting, and I look forward to meeting the new people on that committee or that council. Second of all, I was asked to be, I guess, a judge, I'll say, on the Explore Fairbanks community engagement grant, where they give out $100,000. And there was roughly about 30 people that, or 30 organizations that applied. About four of them didn't make the cut due to paperwork issues. I find that hard to believe, but there's a big change over there at Explore Fairbanks. They're actually engaging into the community more than I think they've ever done in the past. So I thank you, Mr. McCraig, for that.
Ms. Tidwell.
So just because I don't often, I want to make sure I say I absolutely agree with what Jerry said. I think that now we're at a point where everything that happens with going forward in the Polaris building site belongs with us, and I really look forward to that process. It's exciting, and so absolutely agree. And secondly, I flew back to Fairbanks, I guess it was just last night, but I sat next to a firefighter from the North Pole Department, and he had heard about our bonus that we have for EMT, he had heard about that and was considering it, so I spent the better part of my flight trying to recruit him, and hopefully that happens. But I was excited that he knew that that was out there, so that's getting out into the community and other departments. He actually just finished his some kind of an advanced certification, so I don't think he's like 100% there, but very, very close would be an awesome addition. So just in case he's listening, do put in your app. That's all.
Okay. Follow up. Jerry, like Crystal, I agree with everything you said. I keep saying to myself, we've never done this before. I forget, hold it. Jerry's been here about 45 years. He's probably done this before. So at our next meeting, at our next work session, we'd plan to have a time frame worked out for that, for the letter of interest, so you can take a look at that. And remember this, we're in no hurry. There is no time frame on the process. We have people that are interested, yes. But we're going through a public process. If we go, instead of not doing a letter of interest, and we just go do the RFP, great. And we'll design the RFP for your review and approval. Simple as that. And remember, by code, it's your property. You get to determine the city council's property. You get to determine how this is disposed of and if you want to dispose of it. Simple as that. Okay. Yes.
Where is the property right now? Have they carted everything off yet, or where does that sit?
Well, I haven't been there in the last few days, but, I've been busy. But they're just pulling out the remainder of the hole, and then they start backfilling it, compacting it, and so it's in the final stages, the final remnants. They last Tuesday, they brought in 50 containers on the railroad to send out to Oregon. With the contaminated rubble, as I'll call it, that had paint on it. On Friday, they brought in 110 containers to send out to Oregon, all part of their contract. So little by little, bit by bit, one day, First Avenue is going to be open. It's not going to be a parking lot. That's the only thing I'm going to say.
That's right.
It will not be a parking lot.
Correct.
And after that, you get to say what it's going to be. But I'm going to say it's not going to be a parking lot. We haven't done that before, have we, Jerry? Okay. Madam Clerk.
For my report, I just wanted to mention that there was a resolution of the City Council back in 2019 that was somewhat relevant to this conversation. I'll send that to you, council members, so you have that for some reference. Does the attorney have anything to report?
Just that I appreciate everybody's commitment and continued professionalism. Some of these conversations, these ideas that y'all are wrestling with are big. But somehow this body continues in a very civil way. And I appreciate that.
Madam Clerk.
We're at executive session.
Jerry, you want to bring us here, please?
I would go ahead and move that we go into executive session to discuss just one item, AFL-CIO, labor negotiations. This is our Public Works Department.
Okay.
Is there a second?
Second. Third.
Okay. We will go into executive session, and we'll be back at 8:05. And I will not.
City Council met in executive session, discuss one item, no formal action taken.
Okay, is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second. Yeah. Seeing no opposition, we're adjourned.